welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. There is no Scotty Hertz here today. He took a trip to the dentist this week, and like the viral video of the same name, the results were fairly predictable. So he is a mumble mouth today, so I have to go solo. But we wish Scotty well because, well, nobody likes a trip to the dentist. Anyway, Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel, or you can subscribe through iTunes. So with Scotty away, I had to call in a couple of stringers. I have a couple of good ones. Later in the show, I will be having Ward 2 Councillor Andy Van Helleman on, and he's going to complete our Ward 2 set. We've previously been graced by the presence of James Gordon, so we will have the complete Ward 2 bingo card of two spaces. Well, whatever. Anyway, my first guest, though, is our first Ward 4 Councillor guest, and I am pleased to welcome Mr. Mike Salisbury to Open Sources. Mike, how are you today?
Good afternoon.
I'm just going to shut off the music now, because I think we've...
Can I stop dancing now? You told me I had to dance. You said that they could see this on the radio.
I might have made that part up. I apologize. I just wanted to see if you would do it. But yeah, it is. It's a new year, so I appreciate you being here to set a tone. And I feel like... we have to address the elephant in the room, first of all.
I didn't know there was an elephant, so that would be fantastic.
Yeah, you and I got into a bit of trouble last year. It was...
Yes, that elephant.
Yeah, so, you know, just to sort of clear the air on that, and I'm not mad at you, you're not mad at me. You know, we were both... I was anxious for a story, and perhaps you were anxious to get a story out.
Well, I don't know if I was anxious to get a story as much as I was blowing off steam and pretty upset with what I had to go through.
Right.
It was a terrible experience, and I came out, and I was pretty angry. So I may have shot my mouth off and said a few things that probably shouldn't have been said. And you reported them. Good on you.
Well, thank you. I'll take the compliment. I mean, it seemed to be one of these things that it blew up, and it blew up in a very public way. But I think it addressed a lot of things I was stewing beneath the surface. And I think one of the difficulties I've had addressing in the year I've been doing the serious week to week coverage of council is just kind of how much goes on behind the scenes. And mm-hmm. I'm not implying a conspiracy at all, like that you guys are like trying to keep stuff under wraps and that you're working with the saucer people and all that stuff. But just in terms of how much of the city business sort of happens but in the closed door meetings because of, you know, the confidentiality issues, legal issues and things, you know, understandable reasons. I do wonder if it feels from my perspective that perhaps too much goes on behind closed doors, and perhaps we're a bit too cautious in that respect.
I'm not certain about that. I know that the criteria for what is discussed in camera or behind closed doors is generally that of a legal nature, or the transaction of property, or things to do with identifiable individuals in terms of employment issues and things. Yeah. Things that really could pose a real problem if discussed outward. Now, but that doesn't mean that there isn't, you know, you got to wonder, okay, well, why is there so much of that stuff going on behind the scenes? Maybe, but I don't think there's a core problem with the issues that are being discussed, but certainly that event that transpired was new ground for our city.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that it was a turning point? Like, have things gotten better from your point of view?
Well, there's been, I mean, I mean, for those who don't know, I mean, there was a meeting where quorum was denied, where enough city councilors felt that there was enough risk of continuing in the way that things were continuing, that they decided that it was better to abstain from the process rather than participate in the process. And so for the first time in Guelph's history, we actually lost quorum at a meeting with enough people that felt that was the appropriate action to take. And as I say, I was so upset with being put in that position, mm-hmm. that that I think I expressed my frustration, and that's ultimately what led to the accusation that I had disclosed content from an in-camera meeting. I will forever debate that that is not the case.
Right.
I would absolutely challenge that the report that came forward and suggested that was terribly put together. Not just because it fingered me, but because it was just so poorly done.
Right.
But that's water under the bridge. But
yeah.
What I think isn't water under the bridge is it's a very similar environment where there's one side played against the other, or sort of not entirely transparent interpersonal workings with the organization.
Right. Because I think there's a narrative out there that city council is a lot more dysfunctional than, at least from my point of view at the media desk, that it is. There are a lot more times where there's general agreement than there is. A lot of people put the emphasis on these 7-6 votes. Like there's this wing of 7 people who are left and 6 people who are right. And it's when you're kind of watching the play by play during the game. It's that's not how it looks like.
Well, and let's not confuse disagreement with dysfunction.
Sure.
They're totally different things. And in fact, disagreement is good. If you had a council that agreed on everything, effectively rubber stamping everything, I think you'd find that a good portion of the community is not represented.
Right.
And so when you've got a diverse community like Guelph represented at a city council meeting, you're going to have different points of opinion. The dysfunction may come about with the way that the meetings are chaired, the way that one side, where people play those differences of opinion for personal gain or in order to get their point across, mm-hmm. or what they think to be effective in terms of accentuating those differences of opinion and bringing a divide rather than bringing it together. That's certainly a case where I think one could say that's dysfunctional rather than disagreement.
Mm-hmm. It's been halfway now through this term of council. December December the 1st was the official halfway mark. You've been on council before. How does it feel, at this point in the term where you're kind of, you've gone through, the list of priorities. There's been stuff that's come up you haven't expected. And I'm wondering if you're looking at sort of things coming up, like you have 2 more years left in your term and things that you haven't got to. And I guess I'm looking for that, the report card, your how you think you've been faring, you as a counselor and you as a member of council.
Well, there's been a number of projects that I've championed,
mm-hmm.
and we've been able to bring consensus and bring staff together. And one of the things that I've been trying to build on the momentum, I was part of the skate park relocation committee,
mm-hmm.
that ultimately landed the skate park where it is now. And I said, well, that's great. Let's keep going with that. And there's the idea of a bike park,
mm-hmm.
Similar idea to the skate park, except dirt jump tracks and things like that. You see it going into Toronto along the QEW.
Right.
They've built one in Toronto there, and we were able to find support for things like that and move that forward. There's also a lot of support for some really important stuff. The infrastructure funding was huge. I
mm-hmm.
think it was also very, in many ways it was divisive in that people, I think there was general consensus that there was a need, but some discussion on what that would look like and how to fund it. And I think it was a big deal. It was a significant turning point that we were able to move some solution forward. I mean, people aren't going to like it. I know when I open my tax bill, I don't care for it much. but the fact of the matter is I'd probably care less if it were 5 times that because there was a major catastrophic malfunction of infrastructure.
Right.
And that's ultimately what we're trying to prevent is to soften the blow. So there's a lot of that. There's the, how's that going to roll out in terms of how that money is going to be implemented and spent?
Right.
Transit will continue to be a huge thorn in everyone's side. I can't believe that after all this time, we haven't been able to solve it. Now, having said that, I mean, part of our problem is our city does not align itself well to a grid.
Right.
We have 2 rivers that run through. It really creates a very difficult transit implementation. Having said that, we spend a tremendous amount of money on it.
Mm-hmm.
And on one hand, we need to move it forward. And on the other hand, it shouldn't be just an endless money pit. We need to find a cost-effective and worthwhile solutions to the problem.
Is it not cost effective now? Because I mean, just in terms of the ratio, you know, the, in terms of how much money's put in from the operating budget and how much money is put in from the fare boxes, it's a pretty good ratio.
I think we took a real hit last year when, and I'm not going to get into who supported it and who didn't, but at the end of the day, council as a whole decided on a reduction of services during the summer, which may not have affected the student population significantly, but I heard a tremendous number of people from my ward that were saying, "Hey, I'm having trouble getting to work."
Mm-hmm.
And these are the people that two sets of folks: people who choose transit,
right,
and people who have no choice but transit. And both of those are not the people you want to lose with that. So, and we didn't regain that ground with this year's budget. That was something when the mystery $400,000 came on the table. I brought that forward to say, well, let's spend that on reinstating transit services back to 2015 levels. So it wasn't really moving us forward. It was just getting us back on track, and it got voted down.
The mystery 400 being the money, the extra money from the reassessment of property in Guelph.
No, actually, that was disclosed at the beginning. What happened is there was additional money found through the dividend from Guelph Hydro.
Mm-hmm.
It was made aware to the mayor several days before the meeting. He let a couple of his insiders know, a couple of councillors know, but didn't make an announcement at the beginning of the budget debate. It continued really for several hours before, well, quite frankly, I happened to notice this CAO of Hydro in the office and during the break, or in the audience and during the break. I said, you know, we don't normally see your presence here for budget. Why are you here? And that's how I found out about it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I found out, I said, hey, guys, I didn't know this, but we have $400,000 that's sitting on the table that nobody knows about. Let's restore transit services with it. And it still leaves a bit of a bitter taste in my mouth the way that rolled out.
You think it was purposely political?
Pause.
All right. Well,
that's not pause for you. I just realized that I paused. Purposely political. I'm not going to say that, but I think it was, It was not transparent. It was not. I think there's some integrity issues. There's an issue in terms of how that should have rolled out. Here's the thing: when you're going into a budget situation and you want to have a valid debate with everyone at the table, if you want to honor those differences, then you say here's what we have to play with.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's $400,000 is a significant chunk of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
If that's available, you need to let that, you know, there were decisions made through that council budget process, decisions and votes taken, made, and choices made with people that did not know that was available.
Right.
That could have changed things. That could have changed the entire tone of the debate. It could have changed a number of outcomes. It could have changed the tax rate.
Right.
It could have changed a number of things if we had just simply known. I think it's incumbent upon the mayor, if he's got that kind of information, to make that part of the announcement at the beginning of the budget process. Hey, guys, we found some additional money on the table, and we need to factor that into the conversation.
Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be no surprises.
There was, and that's the kicker. That is, I think, the thing that irritates me the most is I wanted to believe.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to believe because this is not our first rodeo. This is not the first time we've had to deal with trust on this council, and it was a flawless. It was really a remarkable process. Our staff put together a budget process that was so well orchestrated, and I think a lot of credit to our CAO for our new CAO for that. He brought a process forward that was incredibly well orchestrated, and the mayor was upfront, going, guys, let's be clean on this, let's be straight on this, let's have no surprises. And there was a cynical part of me that said, okay, when's the other shoe going to drop? And you know, 2 hours in, I'm thinking, wow, there's no other shoe.
Mm.
And then lo and behold, I get kicked by it.
Do you get along well personally with the mayor? Because it seems
the mayor is a remarkably charismatic and likable person. That doesn't answer your question. You know what?
Because there are times watching you, you put your heads together and you come up with something, and I'm wondering as people,
yeah. we both have the same motivation. We both want what's best for a city. I think politically we may disagree on how that's implemented. And if it were only that, it would be a beautiful relationship. I think that the challenge I have is with things, the gotcha moments, the things where I feel like I'm being misled, the things where I feel like I'm being tricked, or I'm being lied to. And I'm not, you know, I think those are the things where it makes it really hard to go, you know, come on, we're on the same team here. We're trying to achieve the same objective.
Right. I want to talk about some issues. One of the things I think, and I referred back to your website to see, you know, some of the things that are important to you. And one of them was traffic safety. And I've been working on a post for Politico about, and this is kind of like a lot of my stories comes from an anecdotal place, but I've been noticing at the West End Rec Center, it seems to be happening this winter. I hadn't particularly noticed it before, but the traffic flow, there seem to be a lot of people who like to light there in the where the bus parks along that loop there. It makes it difficult for traffic to come through. And I was talking to Vicky Dupuy, the general manager, and she's like, this is kind of a systemic problem with the West End Rec Center, that it's the weird design of it, where there's parking here, parking here, parking here, but all the parking people seem to see is the front. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, in terms of what kind of feedback you've been getting from our fellow Ward 4ers, because I'm a Ward 4er myself, and so I can't imagine it's gone unnoticed by the public.
Well, it hasn't. And traffic issues seem to take forever to resolve. I know that there's when they put in the Costco.
Right.
The intersection there was intended to connect through to the West End Rec Center. The lights are there, and the deal is pretty much on the table and ready to go. I know I've been working with city staff and the adjacent landowner on that, because there's a land swap that has to take place, which is in the benefit of everyone. And the first term that I was on council, what are we talking, 8 years ago? I was talking about that, trying to get that together. At the beginning of this term, city staff and my ward mate, Christine Billings, and myself and staff went around, and we toured the area and talked about these issues. And so these things are being discussed, but I'm not seeing anything happen with it. Mm-hmm. So that's frustrating. I think one of the bigger challenges in the West End for traffic is the cumulative impact of all the development that's coming online. Mm-hmm. We've got an additional commercial with the Lowe's anticipated at the corner of Elmira and Imperial.
Yep.
Elmira and Paisley.
Yeah.
We've got all of the rental housing that's going up along Paisley.
Yeah, and there's four apartment buildings.
Huge.
Yeah.
And every single one of these developments does a traffic study if required. But I'm not entirely certain that it contemplates the cumulative effect of that. So any one of them on their own is like, yeah, okay, this is good. But the cumulative effect. So one of the things that I've been pushing for is because I think it was 2028 where they were looking at just doing a feasibility study for extending Elmira Road out to 24, which has a number of complex issues, including deals with the county and stuff like
right.
that. But there's an example. It's like this, the West End was not designed for regional draw retail,
right.
like Costco. Costco bringing in not just people from Guelph, but people from the surrounding areas.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really well set up for that. And so there's going to be some issues there. So staff are aware of it. I know they're working on it, but it just seems to take a really long time.
Yeah, there's an endless line for the gas bar at Costco, for sure. Since we're talking about development, I wanted to talk about the old Lafarge lands, because it seems like, I remember during my hotel days, when I was working front desk, we had a number of railroad workers staying, and this was the winter of 2012, 2013, and he's like, yep, we're going to be working on that underpass on Silver Creek this coming spring. And that was spring 2013.
Right.
And now we're going into spring 2017, and it's still a one-way stop.
Well, it's interesting, the two issues that we're talking about as far as the development of retail in the West End and that issue are linked, specifically in that Costco was intended to go there.
That's right.
An anchor tenant.
Yeah.
And that developer was prepared to move forward with that. We did a secondary plan. It's approved in the official plan. And that work was tied to that development. Well, when that slowed or was stalled or for whatever reason, Costco and Lowe's decided to move into the West End, that basically took the momentum away from that project. And without an anchor tenant at this point in time, the developer doesn't have the ways and means to move that project forward. So it's once again back on the back burner. But the plan's there. It's been approved. And at some point it will move forward because if not Costco or Lowe's, there'll be something else that's going to look for a location. It's a great location. It's right on the intersection of pretty much every major highway in or out of the city.
That's true.
6, 7, and 24 all come together on that corner. So it's a great location. And when that happens, that'll take place.
It's just one of these things, right, where, you know, we hear, and there was so much negotiating with the neighborhood group there, the Howitt Park neighborhood group, and Armel, who owns much of the property on the Imperial side, and then nothing happens. Mm-hmm. And we see that frustration over on the East End with the grocery store and Loblaw. And it's one of the things I find valuable in these conversations is that, you know, to learn about what's going on with these things when it isn't making news, when there isn't ribbon cuttings or groundbreakings and that kind
of
thing.
Well, all of the work that was done is captured in the official, in the secondary plan for that area. So all of the concerns are being, were wrapped into that, and everyone was happy with that. We can lay the groundwork, we can do the preparatory work and have that ready to go. But at the end of the day, if the private sector is not ready to move forward, or if they lose their key tenant, or the economy tanks out, or any number of reasons, be it the East End or the West End, where the private sector looks at it and says, we don't see a business case to move forward with this, then all the preparation in the world isn't gonna make that happen. Sometimes people think that, you know, we at City Hall have more power than we do to actually make things happen, but it's remarkable. We facilitate things to happen.
That's the other value in these conversations, is just that people sort of learn what the limitations are. And I think there's, you know, perhaps a natural inclination for people to blame government first, whether it's justified or not. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes, you know, it isn't government standing in the way. It's, you know, I think if, you know, we could put Dan and Bob out in the East End there with a big banner that says build now.
Right. I mean, my understanding, I don't have intimate knowledge of the East End issue, but my understanding is that it's very tied towards the major food retailers in the city and what their plans are to drive traffic to their both existing and new locations. So if they make a corporate strategic decision that says we want to drive more traffic to an existing facility that they've just upgraded, we're not going to move forward with this, and we're not about to sell it to a competitor, you're not going to see anything happen. And they have, you know, if they own the property and they continue to pay their taxes, they can do with it what they want.
Absolutely. We're unfortunately coming to the end of our time, but before we do that, it is the start of the new year. Council is still taking some time off. But when you come back and it's business as usual, what are you looking to get accomplished this year?
Well, as I say, I think two things. Really looking at the service, I don't know if the terminology keeps shifting around, service rationalization, service review.
Right.
I believe it's service review is what we landed upon. But really seeing how that rolls out. I mean, we need to move forward on that. The fact that it's been delayed this long is just unacceptable. We need to move that forward and get that going. Second to that, and tied to that, is really saying, okay, we've got this infrastructure funding in place now, and it's split between existing historical infrastructure and forward thinking, and the historical stuff, I think we're relying on our staff to say, here's what needs to be done in the order that it needs to be done in, but moving forward in terms of, you know, libraries and South End rec centers and other improvements to our city that improve the quality of life for our citizens and make this the best place in Ontario to live, that's going to be some debates, we may not be that far off. I think there's some general consensus on what's important in this city. So,
Well, I think I know. I look forward to seeing what comes up this year, and we'll see what happens.
Fantastic.
And if you want to, how can people get in touch with you if they want to reach out and ask you some more questions?
Ward4Guelph.ca. That's ward4Guelph.ca is my website. All my contact information is available at City Hall. You go to Guelph.ca and look up counselors, and there'll be my phone number, which you can reach me at my cell phone. I'm available to anyone who has any questions and wants to talk.
Excellent. And I'm sure people will want to talk, and we'll keep talking. And I appreciate you being the sacrificial guest for our first show of 2017.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much, Adam.
And thank you. And I'm going to call it a break here, and we're going to play some PSAs and some music, and then we will come back with our second guest of the afternoon. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we will be right back.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 Guelph, Ontario.
And that was Dentist, which is a song from Little Shop of Horrors. And that was the new Broadway edition, the new Broadway cast. I gather, I'm not a theater person, and I just use the finger quotes, even though we're on radio. That happens sometimes. But so they did a new Broadway production of that. And that was from Little Shop of Horrors, Dentist. I thought it was apropos. I searched in Spotify for the keyword dentist, and that was the first thing that came up. So I thought, great, and it's dedicated to Scotty Hertz, who is of course away because of the dentist, and we wish him well, and he will be back here on the show next week. But for this week, we just had Mike Salisbury in, and now I'm pleased to welcome War II counselor Andy Van Hellemond. Andy, thank you for coming on Open Sources this week.
You're welcome, Adam.
And yes, and I, as I pointed out at the top of the show, that you complete our War II set, because we had James in a few months ago. I wanted to start off, and we were talking a bit about this. You're kind of thought of as the quiet one on council, as the guy. You know, you don't. You know, there are a lot of, not to be derogatory to anyone in particular on council, but I think a lot of people would say that there's some people on council who like to hear themselves talk, but you are not a one of them. And I heard somebody attribute this to your days actually as a referee. That's kind of your headspace. You watch and you see where it goes, and then you will contribute when you have a sense of the floor, when you see something others don't see. So,
well, I learned a long time ago, as I'm getting close to my 70th birthday, that you learn a lot more by listening than by talking. Mm-hmm. You got to be a good listener, and you got to observe other people's thoughts. There's a lot of good points made. Somebody like Mike makes a lot of good points some nights, and I take them under advisement and listen. I don't think we change too many people's minds when we sit around the horseshoe. I think what we do is get out some very good points that perhaps some of us haven't thought of. Mm. And it evaluates in our thinking to help us make a decision. I think, as a group, we've got to have a bit of a team concept. And that hasn't been there for a bit. However, I feel we've gotten a lot closer with the discussions we've had and with me sitting listening. If I have something that I think is important to say, I will say it. But a lot of things get covered by everybody else. So it would make the nights have been long enough, some of them. So if I got on to a bit of a rant like I'm doing now, it would be even longer. So I don't mind. Like I said earlier, you learn more by listening than by talking.
When you say you can't, you're around the horse, you don't change too many minds, you mean when it comes to the people or your fellow counselors? Or,
well, I think the thought process is we're there to make a decision on something. We're well-versed. We have a month to get to staff to ask questions. If I have any doubts on on what the project's about or what the recommendation is. I have ample time to check with people that wrote the report or people that are involved with the project.
Mm-hmm.
And I can ask questions that I may have and get a better understanding as to why they're doing it. And so to sit there then and start explaining what I've learned from staff and why I think it should be the right answer and the right way to go. And I believe, and use the word I. it's not about I. It's about doing what's best for the people of Guelph. And that's sort of my thought process on it. I try and observe and say, you know, does this fit? Does this work? Do we need to get this thing rolling properly?
Mm-hmm. Again, we were talking but before coming to air, you mentioned the Ward 4 is a jump in place, perhaps not as much Ward 2 at the moment. But I was actually hoping to revisit with you some of the things that happened this past year. One of them is what's going on with the 75 Dublin Street. Because there, before Christmas, there's been four OMB appeals filed.
Yeah.
Even though Guelph's not going to be getting federal money to develop that, so it's perhaps rather unlikely that's going to be built or even built anytime soon. But in terms of your point of view on the deliberations, and I think you made the point that the federal government needed to try and work with the cities, because part of the problem was the tight deadline that the city was given.
Very much so. There's rules and regulations in place for the developers to apply under, and some of them weren't met, I don't think, by the applicant, yet he was awarded that through no fault of his own. He's got the ability to be chosen, as some of the other applicants had. And so what happens when a lot of the things aren't really in place yet, and through no fault of his own, because of the late arrival of the funds, things start to get rushed, things start to get pushed quickly along the path of acceptance. And that was in an area which is our new downtown now. We've
right.
we've stretched it from Gordon and up to the top to Dublin. And so it's different things apply up there. And the developer was asking for a little bit of leeway with a fifth floor. The building was going to be quite large for the area. And that was something that I thought wasn't his fault. It's a shame that he had to go through a lot of this quick work and spending a lot of money on consultants and people with shadows and stuff like that, when he was sort of a victim of circumstance by getting his money late. And I blame the government, but it was quite convenient that the county, who threw the money at Guelph, now said right away 2 days later, oh, we have a backup plan. It's going to go up to Palmerston. You know, and they're going to get the money spent there. So they well knew that this may not fly here.
Right.
Or they wouldn't have had such a backup plan that quickly in place.
Yeah.
That's my opinion and my opinion only.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that it didn't get a good start and it didn't end good for the city of Guelph.
Mm-hmm. In terms of brain fart, sorry. in terms of how that could have been done better, I mean, it seemed like, I don't know, if it seemed like everybody was kind of at fault. The city had its own standards to meet. The government had, you know, its deadlines. Mr. Lammer had his priorities. It just seemed like it was doomed to fail. And that's just my point of view, is that from going back to September when he came forward and said, like, we have to get this, like, shovels in the ground before March 31st or the money is gone. It just seemed like there was no way this was going to happen to begin with.
And it puts a lot of pressure on a lot of people. And that's why the levy and the infrastructure money is so important to have in place, so that when the money does become available and is being awarded to cities, we can step up and say, because we have a terrific intergovernmental group of people working on behalf of the city, that they're constantly in touch with what's available. And they then can be, say, we're interested. We have the funds to go forward. We would like to apply for X amount of dollars. So I think the people of Guelph you know, realize that we have a problem and we need to correct it. Mm-hmm. And so this levy with 1%, it's based on your assessment value of your property.
Right.
So $100,000 for each $100,000, it's $5 mm-hmm. roughly if it's 0.5%.
Right.
We made it 1%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's roughly $10 per every $100,000 of assessment.
Right.
So if your house is assessed at $300,000, you're looking at $30.
Right.
And divided by, that's a year.
Right.
Divided by the 12 months. So it's $2.50 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So you're contributing to something that we need to have in place. And if everybody does that with their $2.50 a month, if it's $300,000, naturally, if it's more, it costs more. And that'll help hopefully move bigger projects forward in the city and make it a better city than it already is.
Mm-hmm. Have you? What kind of feedback have you gotten about that? Because this was a fairly contentious point in going into the budget process this year, and I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think people see you as someone who's pretty reliably, in terms of your voting record, for the lower the tax burden is, the better.
Correct.
Good.
But that's not always possible.
And, right.
This now establishes, and what I liked about it was it's going to be revisited every year.
Mm-hmm.
So now with the reviews that we're doing on different staff areas, the waste management one, and if we're able to find money in-house, mm-hmm. then perhaps the levy will not be required. I think the biggest complaint or voice I heard was that the things like this never go down. So you
right.
got us for 1% this year, but next year it'll be 2,
mm-hmm.
and it'll always continue to climb. And I feel quite confident, and I know the mayor is quite adamant that the staff is going to have to try and find some savings internally,
mm-hmm.
and at least we have something in place to match or meet the money that would be available. And I know that I think the federal government, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was like $81 billion,
mm-hmm.
Like a terrific amount of money, or $81 million. That's a big difference. But there was
right.
a terrific amount of money going to be made available this year
mm-hmm.
in 2017. So we're going to be available and ready to go with that.
I think what in from you know the observational standpoint that there was a lot of immediate reaction, and I noticed this on my social media the night of the budget, a lot of immediate negative reaction to this, but that's kind of gone away, and I'm wondering if the purposefulness of this has kind of settled in people's mind in terms of that, you know, it kind of maybe it had to be done. And the thing that struck me was we had a budget last year that passed 7-6. We had a budget this year, the tax operating budget passed unanimously, but this also passed by a 10-3 vote, including your own. And I do wonder if that sort of unanimousness, that sort of the majority speaks, and there are people, of course, on council who have different philosophies, understandably, but everyone kind of agreed on this, that, yeah, 1% hurts, but it's necessary.
Yes, and it's what's best for the city. I don't know if you recall that Burlington had a terrific downpour
mm-hmm.
and a terrific flooding.
Mm-hmm.
Windsor had terrific flooding because their infrastructure and their piping and their system was outdated.
That's right.
Couldn't handle it. These storms are quite different now than they used to be 20, 30 years ago. So we have to learn from other people's misfortune and be prepared that should we have a terrific storm or heavy rain that, you know, we're not going to be swimming in our basements. And that would cost a lot more, I think, and I believe people would realize that it would cost them a lot more than $2.50 a month to clean up.
Yeah.
So I think it's a real positive step, and I think you just have to keep informing and educate the people that these things are happening around us, and
mm-hmm.
we have to be better prepared, because if we don't learn from other people's mistakes,
mm-hmm.
then we deserve what happens.
And speaking of water, you got a little bit of the activist in you this year when you helped out with the petition for, you know, with James trying to get attention to the water issue.
Well, I believe, I think we sort of came at it a little from the wrong side. Right. I like the idea that the provincial government is made aware, but there's a lot of people taking a lot of water all over the province.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we were, or I was wrong, or we were wrong in just fingering one company.
Right.
I mean, they're one of many. The city of Guelph takes water every day, too,
mm-hmm.
and we sell it.
Sure.
So we're making money off the water we take out of the ground, too, as is with Nestle's. But it's the amount of money they pay for it, and they're trying to maybe expand, and we have good water. And I don't think it's fair to deplete to the point one day that we have to start looking at other places.
Right.
So before that gets to the critical stage, I think it's time that people perhaps like myself that were just ordinary to the point that we weren't really on one side or the other,
mm-hmm.
start to pay attention and get more and more people interested in this, because this is my grandkids and my kids and their kids, and you know what? It's not fair to put them in that position. So somebody's got to be accountable, and I think the premier's got to start realizing that, you know what, taking it for profit has got to slow down.
Yeah, and I would agree with that, and I've been fairly critical about the provincial government's reaction to this, because it has felt like it sort of fell upon... And perhaps Guelph became the lightning rod unintentionally, but it did feel like someone had to say something. And
yeah,
even though it was a provincial jurisdiction, it did take a Guelph to sort of galvanize a conversation and to get the province off the bench.
Yeah, and if definitely don't want a pipe out into the lake to draw our water. And we have great water, and we should try and maintain the levels to the point. And people are going to say that there's... not any serious concerns, but it doesn't hurt them to remind them, too, that we're around and we're watching.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of watching, I revisited an interview you did back when you got into politics, back in the, it was an interview in the Mercury, and you said in terms of, you know, getting into the political ring and your intention, you said you've got to tell them this is where it's at in terms of, you know, and I think what you're getting at is straight talk with people. You've been at this for several years now. Is that still your philosophy?
Yeah, I don't think too many people like surprises.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you explain and reason with people why there's increases and why we're not able to do that and why certain things need to cost more, they can buy into it. It's the surprises where you find out that, we didn't handle City Hall situation very good.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody got mad and upset and put somebody off the job, and it ends up costing, and that money was reserve money that was in reserves. So it's cost us probably $5-6 million, and that reserve money is taxpayers' money,
mm-hmm.
and I'm a taxpayer.
Mm-hmm.
You're a taxpayer. You live in Guelph. Yeah. So it's that kind of surprise, and then the district energy, you know, there's nothing wrong with district energy if it's handled and done properly. So obviously, I, as a counselor, feel that the people that are involved with this have it together,
mm-hmm.
and they're hiring and getting the proper consultants in to tell them, don't do this and do this.
Right.
So I feel that it's being looked after. And then you find out another surprise that, you know, it's there, but it's not there.
Right.
So that's sort of why I think people will understand and reason a little bit better if they're told and don't get too many surprises.
It's almost like the way I read it, it's you're trying to take the politics out of politics.
Yeah, I think if people sit down and talk it over and come to an understanding that I'm not always right, you're not always right.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is if the leader of the group who has one vote,
mm-hmm.
the mayor is as powerful as I am.
Right.
I can vote once, he votes once. We have to do it as a group, and I don't mean we all vote unanimously one way or the other.
Right.
And we'll have disagreements. But it's about making Guelph better, and it's about doing what's best for the people. That's sort of my understanding of what the – bring the reasoning from the people in my area, my ward,
mm-hmm.
our ward, James and I,
mm-hmm.
and we get along quite well with different things, and he has his views on things and I have my views on things, but we seem to work it out so it can be done. And – what's going to make the city better? Mm-hmm. Is this something the city needs or is it doesn't need? And why it needs it and why it doesn't need it.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got some major projects on horizon. If we can get some partnership with investors' money to get the library going, I'm all for the library. My wife and I have three daughters. They've all grown up, gone to university, all graduated, and have families. And they, I'm a big believer in libraries.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's becoming even a better place, I think, because it's more like a community center.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people go there to get on a computer, not just go there for a book.
Right.
And there's programs for the preschoolers, and there's programs. I'm on board and understand that, and that makes our city better.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're asking for a building or a place to set up shop. I'd like to be involved in the council to get them that, but it's a substantial cost. So I think this term and we're going to try and find out what size and what they actually need, and hopefully we can come up with a number that we got to aim for and then start getting it done.
And that's why I find these conversations so fascinating, is because when you kind of like take the politics away, you sort of see, and also outside the sort of the combative ring that the horseshoe can sometimes be, intentionally or unintentionally, no matter how, depending on your point of view. But there's a lot that we agree on, and that's kind of one of the goals in having these conversations, we're fairly nonpartisan. We agree more than we disagree. And I think one of the things I'm always confronting is the narrative that there's incredible rancor and dysfunction on council. I mean, there it sometimes swells up, but that's expected to be about any group of people who are working together.
That's true. But I think the first thing is, and I've always been in team sports,
mm-hmm.
so I know teams that work together, pull together, exchange ideas together. This is a little different. You can't have it with more than seven. You can't have a quorum to sit around a table and talk. So,
yep.
However, the idea of not winning or losing, that's not what this is about. This
right.
is about trying to make it better for the area where you live in.
Mm-hmm.
Without raising the cost to the point where we can't handle it. We chase people away. Also helping people that are in need and need some help and be able to come up with ways to support and make their life better.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought, and I still believe that what a counselor is to do. I'm not there to say, I have to win. It's not winning or losing. It's just improving the life we have here.
Well, let me ask you this then. How do you intend to improve lives this year? What's on your radar?
Well, I think the service reviews that we're doing will definitely get a good insight into if there could be any money saved. I mean, there's another thing. There was over a contract with a company from Detroit to take their garbage here. And
mm-hmm.
You know, we had a chance to accept them or not. I didn't accept them. Jim Fafaro didn't accept them. But I don't say I was right and I won,
mm-hmm.
Even though it cost us probably $2 or $3 million to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a cost to everybody. And those decisions are to be made better by myself or us. I've also, agree with a lot of things that are being done in the West End.
Mm-hmm.
We're expanding the city. I would like to see the East End get a little more commercial property established. But the owner of the property owns the property on Aramasa, and
right.
he's not going to have two stores within a short area. And so it's that kind of thing that you have to live with. You can't change.
Right.
And now the land's the innovation district or the innovation area there. A lot of water on one side. The prime land is up top. The provincial government won't want to move it. They want money. They're broke.
Mm-hmm.
They could use some money. Part of the land is not that good.
Mm-hmm.
It's got different buildings on it that wouldn't be very appetizing for people to build a house behind.
Right.
So suddenly you haven't got a great big piece of land there. You've only got a corner of it that's up on top on College, and the provincial government naturally thinks it's worth a lot, and we as a city say no, it's not. There's only so much we can do with it,
mm-hmm.
and at what cost? So we have to find private investors or people to come in and try and help develop that. And when that gets going, hopefully that end of town or the east side of town will start to flourish just like the west side has.
There's a lot riding on that, isn't there, the development of the Innovation District?
Mm-hmm. Because the jail itself is heritage.
Right.
So if I said to you, you buy that, but oh, by the way, you got to make sure you don't do too much to that jail because
right.
it's a special place. So what happens with that kind of stuff, heritage can drag you down too.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is it costs a lot of money to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't generate any revenue. You don't bring money in. We don't have tours of the jail,
mm-hmm.
you know, to say, come on, look at what a jail used to look like.
Mm.
And so we don't do anything. And maybe we have some movies and some people coming in and doing advertisement videos there. But it's not a money maker.
Mm.
So it's an anchor around your leg to pay more tax.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we can't get rid of it because it falls under the heritage thing. So,
and nobody wants a jail in their backyard.
No, you got that right.
Close or not.
So anyway, the idea of it's got a lot of deficiencies to it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we're looking at taking on a project that where are we going to generate any revenue from and who's going to come and want to be around that? So if we can find an active user for the jail, you know, maybe a cold storage place or somebody, you know, that would come and put some freezers in there and make it a productive place.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what could happen? But
mm-hmm.
right now it keeps going on and on and on. And it's a hard thing to digest.
I'm going to wrap up by asking something I'm kind of curious about. Referees and politics, because down the road in Halton Hills, Brian Lewis sits on the city council there. Bruce Hood once ran for federal office in the same neck of the woods. So what is it about retired referees and getting into politics?
Well, I think what happens in our job, like you said earlier, we have to make a decision like in a split second. It's either yes, he did it, or no, he didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
This, to me, is very long and drawn out, this decision making. We have our minds made up a lot quicker than it takes us to come to the conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'll shorten this up. When you have people complaining constantly around you in a coffee shop or your neighbors or your friends, you know, rather than talk about it, try and do something about it or try and get involved. And I think that's where it comes from.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Andy, if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Well, my numbers are at City Hall, Andy Van Hellemond at Guelph.ca. I have a lot of people that contact me. My number is available. I can give you the phone number, but if you're interested, they can find it. Being a Ward 2 counselor, we're in an established area. We're going north up Victoria with some new development.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not a lot of building like going on up there as there is in the south end or in the east end or in the west end.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little quieter from the projects. We have a lot of complaints about speeding through the neighborhood.
I bet.
Shortcuts.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to have you back sometime and maybe we'll talk about speeding. But we have to speed to the next program here on CFRU, because that's it for this week's edition of Open Sources. You can stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter, and of course you can find our podcast through the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes. You can connect with me personally at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca. And hopefully Scotty will be back here next week. I'm pretty sure Scotty will be back here next week. And then we'll have some more of that punditry you like so well as we continue in our third year here on Open Sources. So stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And until next Thursday at 5 p.m., we will see you around.